Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.
Good afternoon to you, Pastor Shoga.
Good afternoon, Zema. How are you?
Very well, thank you, Pastor Man. How are you doing?
I'm great.
Lovely, lovely stuff, man. I hope your day's been well spent.
Sure. It's been a busy but fruitful day, yeah.
Busy but fruitful. I love to hear that. Thank you so much. Now, we're talking about practical generosity in a selfish world. And those who are joining us for the first time, by the way, we are talking to Pastor Shoga, who has been nothing but generous with information. We have been taking notes and we've been listening. And I do welcome you to join these discussions. And if you want to call us, you do know the numbers, +27 734 703 520. Now, ever noticed how teens start dressing and talking like one giant collective after enough time together? Yeah, it's like osmosis, but for fashion and slang. Now, this is proof that culture shapes behavior. Likewise, it's crucial that we model generosity in church. But creating a culture of generosity is far more effective than simply telling church members to give. Why? Because when you cultivate a genuine heart, a genuine spirit of biblical generosity, it sets off a domino effect of open-handed giving across the entire congregation. Now, Pastor, how can a church foster a culture, as we just spoken about, a culture of a generosity that moves members from being consumers of ministry to contributors to God's mission?
Thank you very much, Zama. I actually like the way you started. I was actually thinking to myself, do you expect me to answer, or you're telling me, you know, this was super. It's good. Studies have shown that the greatest motivator in life is environment.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. When the environment is conducive, it motivates people to act in a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
This is why we see it in teens, even in group of people like these support groups and stuff like that.
Yep.
It's about creating an environment that is conducive for a certain habit to be established.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same thing with generosity. And your question actually drives us towards a very, very important element. Sometimes the church is worried about the generosity of individuals and forgets the idea of the corporate generosity. So generosity should be there at individual level. It should also be there at corporate level.
Hmm.
We cannot have a church that is not generous itself, but it expects the individuals within it to be generous. That method is not going to work. Studies have actually shown that if the church wants the members to be generous, the church itself should be acting in that kind of way.
Mm.
So there is something that is actually called corporate selfishness.
Mm.
So, and in those kinds of areas where the church is only thinking about itself, it never looks out, it never gives away, it's always looking to get and collect, but it's not seen to actually give. And when I'm talking about giving, I'm not talking just about giving services. I'm actually talking about giving materially to other ministries, or giving materially to the help of individuals within a community and impacting a community positively. It's within that sphere that generosity will also spill over to the church members.
Mm. Love that. I love that. It's actually a very practical way of doing it. Now, in what specific ways can a church demonstrate generosity to its local and immediate community and beyond?
I love the picture that we notice in the early church.
Mm-hmm.
The early church was a place where welfare was seriously, taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
You will notice that they took care of the welfare of the members of a church, and then it spilled over into the community. The Bible makes it clear that there is no one among them who said they lacked anything, because they cared about each other, which means they had moved away from just looking at their own concerns. The Bible is actually clear. No one said that what they had belonged to them on their own, but whoever had more made sure that they are sharing. So this became a community of sharing,
mm-hmm.
a community of caring for one another.
Mm-hmm.
And beginning from there, you can now stretch it into the community.
Yeah, yeah.
We cannot have a church that will create a generous environment when you have people within the same church. Others slept today without eating. Others threw away some food because they're extra.
True, actually.
But, But when you talk about it, people will say, but they didn't say, we didn't know they were hungry. We shouldn't wait for people to say that they need help. Mm-hmm. But every time the church should always be looking out first for its members, and then after it has taken care of its members, it needs to go out into the immediate community and make sure that it's making a positive impact.
True. Now, how should we communicate the concept of a financial stewardship in a way that emphasizes transformation, worship, and worship, not just fundraising?
I think the most important thing is to ask ourselves, what do we want? What is the greatest need of a church? Does a church need money? But money doesn't go to heaven. What goes to heaven are people, you know, that have been saved by Jesus Christ. So once we get to a point where we are emphasizing money more than we are emphasizing the salvation of the people, we've missed the point altogether. And the other unintended consequence that we produce by doing that is making God to look like a beggar. God didn't make people contribute financially because he cannot make financial resources available. God is fully able to take care of the needs of a church and provide for them. The Bible has shown us clearly. He gave the children of Israel manna for 40 years in the wilderness without anyone giving him a donation. He was able to take the text for Jesus and Peter from the head of a fish. God has multiple ways with which to make money. So the challenge that God has when he says people should contribute is not the challenge of money, but it's the challenge of trying to change people from being selfish to being generous. And the medicine for selfishness is generosity. So God wants us to be generous, not because he needs money or he lacks anything. That's why the Bible says, even if I were hungry, I wouldn't tell you, because the cattle upon 1,000 hills are mine. So why does God wants to, he's making us contribute for our benefit. So sometimes in church, we miss that whole point, and then we make the money the main focus instead of the person and the transformation that is supposed to be happening in a person.
Powerful.
No church, allow me to say this statement.
Yes.
No church should make its financial needs the basis for its stewardship education.
Wow.
That's turning a church into a begging organization. No. The motivation for stewardship is the transformation of people so that they can be generous and be molded in the character of Jesus Christ. The financial needs are secondary, and God has multiple ways of taking care of that.
Wow. Powerful stuff. Now, how can the church, equip young adults who may have different financial realities to be both financially responsible and also biblically generous?
Thank you very much for that very, very important question, because young adults are at a very critical stage in their life where they need to accomplish a lot, and their resources are still a bit limited because they haven't created a lot of income streams, and yet the needs are taking from many different directions. So usually as you grow older, more money becomes available and there are less things to do. It is at this very critical formative stage that financial literacy classes are supposed to take center stage. You know, finances are very basic to our life. I think after time, you know, time is one of the most fluid elements of our life. Everyone will need to deal with time. After time, the next thing that is fluid is finances. And yet there is no training. There is no course in school that teaches people financial literacy, how to manage their finances. I was actually laughing last week. Someone was telling me a story of how a banker gambled with all his money and lost all of it. Ooh. I was shocked. I says, how can a banker, honestly, you would think a banker would be shrewd and a better financial manager. But that actually shows you how much people are illiterate when it comes to their finances. So it begins with that training. How do people get clarity in their finances? How do they set their goals, short and long-term financial goals? How do they delay gratification? Because I think this is the other challenge with younger couples. They want to have everything, and they want to have it right now. They look at the older members in the community. They look at the older members in the society. They're driving nice cars. They're staying in this type of house. And I want to have all of it today, which may not be possible. But if I take it step by step, delay gratification, set my long-term goals, have a longer time perspective, be willing, because empires are not built overnight. They are built one brick at a time over a very, very long time. If they can be in that kind of situation, then they can pace themselves and be able to be responsible financially and yet have some extra to be able to give generously to other causes.
Now, I've got a comment here that's coming online, Pastor. It says, I'm going to read it. I read about one church in the U.S., just after the pandemic, 2019, if I'm not mistaken, that's what the writer is saying, where one service during offering time, they announced that everyone who is in need should come collect from the offering basket as it passed by. And interestingly enough, the collections that day were bigger than ever before. And I thought that was an interesting concept. Even more interesting outcome. Well, that's the comment that we're having on the conversation we're having.
Okay, I think it's a, the person is right to say that's an interesting concept, how they did it. But as we read our Bible, we also need to be careful. Jesus makes it clear our giving to him in terms of offering and our giving for charity are not competing virtues, but are virtues that should go together. Jesus clarified this when that experience with Judas, where Mary broke the alabaster box before him, and Judas says, why is this all being wasted? It should have been given to the poor. And Jesus quotes the text that says, help the poor, when he says, the poor you will have always among you, and make sure that you help them, but you will not always have me. So Jesus was actually saying, what he has done is right. Let's not make giving offerings to the church compete with giving for charity, because both needs need to be met. So while that idea is very interesting, they shouldn't be made to compete, but should there should be a strategic way of making sure they move together. Having said that, I actually want to make an observation that many churches seem more interested in having members give towards offering, but less interested in encouraging their members to give for charity. That, again, is a losing strategy. They should always go together. Our giving for helping others and our giving for church programs and projects and stuff should always be held in balance.
Yeah, that's a very nice, explanation there in terms of how we should actually be very, deliberate, especially when we have to give for charity. Because truly, and it's right what you're saying, that very hardly do we actually say, guys, we need to make sure that we have this offering very big, so for charity purposes. I remember, I think yes, last year, a family friend of mine around here in South Africa, I think in Pretoria, was involved in health. What do you call these things? Health exhibitions. Because she's a medical doctor. Now they were, she's an Adventist. And they were doing some work there because they were invited to do some work. And she says to me that, Zama, what I saw there, I have never seen in our church, and I wish that we could do this. And I said, what? She says, this church has literally taken giving to another level. They have been collecting this money every year. And so at the beginning of December, they have got this massive thing, the tent that looks at literally all the needs of the community, from health to social, etc. And not only giving in terms of food, but also giving in terms of making sure that the parks, for instance, are cleaned up and they are made available for everyone. They are cleaned up, painted, and, and I thought, wow, that's actually good, because then it's a comprehensive way of giving. Not only just giving for food and poor resources, but also making sure that communities are actually, relieved in terms of making sure that they are social spaces, they are healthy spaces, et cetera, et cetera. I thought, wow, it's actually powerful.
Great. A good example that shows that the church is no longer just looking at itself, but is also looking outside. So this is a church that is no longer selfish. It's not gathering for itself, but it's willing to give out from what it has gathered. I think that's a very, very good thing. Yeah.
Lovely. Now, Pastor, before I let you go, there's one more question I want to put across to you. What conversations or resources are needed to help Christians navigate issues like sustainable living and ethical consumption?
That's a big topic that I think we should maybe sometime find time to discuss and just deal with it. But I think that the reason why I say this is big, it comes from the way Christians have been educated. We have elevated the spiritual at the expense of the material. And we have forgotten that the Bible actually says, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. So Christians have these concerns that they have put in this class of spiritual, and they've said that this is secondary because it is material. But do you realize that this earth is actually what God gave the human being to be able to cultivate and to keep and to take care of and to improve? So sustainable consumption is also looking in that direction, that the responsibility of taking care of this world and making sure that these resources will still be available for the coming generation is actually part of our stewardship. So I think this is a very, very big topic that is not being spoken about a lot in our churches, because we have taken everything and spiritualized it and forgotten that God put Adam and Eve in a garden and says, take care of it. These are the kinds of conversation we should be having. Does God watch how we work? Does God watch how we improve these resources that he has put us? Is God happy when we destroy the environment? Or we should be careful about how we use these things? I think this is a whole big conversation that is very, very critical when you look at it from a biblical perspective, but that we might not have time to deal with today.
Well, but I agree. It's actually a massive, massive topic. We shall make time. I think the producer will be taking note of that, and we will definitely make time to actually get into the, you know, a detail of that. Now, in terms of the fund, earlier you also mentioned that we've got to take care of those who are within the church before we can actually go out. And I thought it actually caught my mind, because, you know, I remember during the times of COVID in our local church, you know, we had what we called the poor fund. Well, I personally don't think that we named it correctly to say it was a poor fund, but basically...
Yeah, that name attaches some stigma to it.
Exactly,
know?
Exactly. So I don't think it was named, you know, correctly. But nonetheless, this was the fund for internal use, that those who were among us, those who were part of the congregation, who unfortunately would have lost their jobs. Remember, during COVID time, people were not working, etc. And so people fell into job losses, and thereby losses of, you know, income and sustainability. And so that fund was then there to actually help specifically the members of the congregation into making sure that if you have a situation, please do talk to treasury, and it doesn't have to be known by the church because of dignity issues, and let it, you know, let the church distribute whatever that is needed in terms of making sure that at least you don't go to bed hungry, at least have some stuff. I do notice, though, that, you know, it was the first time that we had it, and shortly after the COVID was said to have gone, we then went to original settings where we didn't mind. How far should we go as a congregation to actually look internally? Is it selfish to do that?
No. It's not. It's actually not selfish, because the moment we are thinking like that, each individual in the church is not only thinking about themselves. Do I have lights at home? Do I have heat? Do I have food? But they're also thinking about the other person whom they attend church with, because the idea of generosity is taking us from just looking at ourselves so that we look outside and others. It actually breeds, you know, the reason we spoke about it is breeding an environment of generosity within the church. And it's very important. You were asking, how important is this? Do you realize that in the early church, when the deacons were first elected, the reason why the office of the deacon was established originally was for exactly that purpose that you're talking about. to ensure that this distribution is done equitably among church members and everyone who has a need is taken care of. And the apostles were saying, we won't save tables, but let's look for people to do this. This is why deacons were elected.
Mm.
And I believe our deacons should still be looking out so that each person is not only looking at their needs, but they are also looking at the needs of others. It's not selfish. That's where generosity begins.
Mm. Beautiful stuff. Pastor, I must thank you so much for your time. Lovely, lovely conversation and very educational, I must say as well. Blessings to you. We shall speak to you once again tomorrow at the same time and same place. Thank you and bye-bye.
Thank you for having me, Isama.
Lovely. Goodbye.
Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.